Okay, I'm going to be talking about some work that's very much related to the stuff Mike was talking about on spacing effects and inspired by it in some ways. A lot of different co-authors, so I think I'm mostly just up here because I've done the least work so far, so I'm the guy who's got to talk about it. And we're all part of the Perceptual Expertise Network. So as you've probably heard Jim and others talk about, we can correctly categorize objects at several different levels. So we could call this a picture an animal at the superordinate level, a bird at the basic level, or a robin at the subordinate level. And Tanaka and Taylor had subjects who were bird and dog experts complete a category verification task like this to try to see how expertise interacts with categorization level. And here are sort of typical results in that we see in the orange line, novices in a given domain are fastest at categorizing things at the basic level of bird, whereas experts are equally fast at categorizing things at the subordinate level, like robin. And results such as this has suggested that fluent subordinate level categorization may really be an indicator of perceptual expertise. Jim and I recorded ERPs from subjects who were bird experts or dog experts, and we're particularly interested in looking at this N170 component that previous results had suggested is larger for faces in compared with other non-face objects. And we really wanted to see if it might be similarly enhanced by expertise with things other than faces. And sure enough, we found that for bird experts, the N170 was larger when they looked at bird pictures, whereas for dog experts, it was larger when they looked at dog pictures. Together with Isabel, we found a positive correlation between the amplitude of the N170 and the degree of expertise shown by car experts on a perceptual matching task. So this sort of shows the matching task. And here they're not matching physically identical cars, but subjects are required to match cars that are the same model, but from different years and different perspectives. So this is a task that's quite difficult for car novices, and we found it to be very sensitive to perceptual expertise in several different domains. So research such as I've summarized so far has helped us understand some important differences between experts and novices, and presumably these differences are sort of built upon years of learning by these experts. And so the next thing we wanted to do is to try to see if laboratory training could help us better understand the dynamics of the learning processes contributing to perceptual expertise. And so in our first experiment along these lines, we trained college students to learn to categorize different species of birds from the owl and wading bird family. And so we recorded EEG before and after six days of training. And the key manipulation was whether training was aimed at the subordinate level or the basic level. So each subject learned to categorize one family of birds at the subordinate level of species, as shown here for owls, whereas they learned to categorize the other family of birds at the basic level of family, as shown here for wading birds. Before and after training, we recorded EEG again while subjects completed a subordinate level matching task. And again, subjects here are asked to match according to species rather than exemplar identity. So these are examples of same trials because these are the same species of owls, even though they look quite different physically. So you can see if you don't know a lot about owls, this is maybe a hard task. We've also completed a similar experiment with cars. The categories of cars we used were SUVs, antiques, and sedans. And in addition to using cars rather than birds in this experiment, it also differed in another couple of respects. First of all, we added a third exposure training condition in which subjects just viewed cars that were passively viewed cars that were presented the same number of times as the cars that either received subordinate level training or basic level training. And the second main addition is that we added another ERP post-test a week later to try to get at the longevity of some of these effects. So here is a sort of a broad summary of what we found so far. from these initial experiments with birds and cars. The results were pretty similar for the two types of stimuli, and we found that accuracy on this perceptual matching task was only enhanced by subordinate level training. It wasn't enhanced by exposure or basic level training. We found that this N170 component shown here, it was enhanced equally by subordinate level training, basic level training, as well as mere exposure. Whereas this later ERP component called the N250, shown right here, was only enhanced by subordinate level training. So notice that the accuracy results show a much better correspondence to the N250 results. Both were only enhanced by subordinate level training. So this has led us to believe that the N250 may be a more sensitive index of subordinate level expertise, whereas the N170 just seems to respond to or be sensitive to how many stimuli a person has seen within a given category. So that's sort of the end of the summary, and now looking at some newer research that was guided at a couple of different questions. First of all, we were interested in the question of whether or not similar training effects could be observed with novel stimulus categories, such as these things that we've called creatures that were created by within David Sheinberg's lab. And second of all, we were interested in the question of whether or not perceptual expertise training might benefit from spaced learning. And this question was really inspired by the spacing work that Mike Moser just summarized for us. So here's a couple of different examples of a couple of different families of creatures that we used in this experiment. We had three families total and 16 species within each family and 16 exemplars within each species, as summarized here. And so to the left, you can see a couple of examples of species A and B from family one, and two exemplars within each species. Similarly, we see other examples from family two. And the design of the experiment overall was very, very similar, really exactly the same as the car training experiment I already talked about, in that subjects learned to categorize or learned to label, perhaps importantly, I wanted to point out the labeling aspect, learned to label one family of creatures at the subordinate level of species, learned to label another at the basic level of family, and the third, again, was just passively exposed for the same number of times as the other ones without any explicit training task. So this slide summarized as our spacing manipulation. And so training and testing took place over a 5-week period. Half the subjects were assigned to a long spacing condition, the other half to a short spacing condition. The ERP test sessions during which subjects completed a perceptual matching task are shown in red, whereas the training sessions are shown in green. So you can see if you look at the test sessions, they were equated between the long and the short spacing groups. The only thing that differed between them is the spacing of the 4 training days, with the long spacing group having 2 days intervening between each training session, whereas the short spacing group got 4 consecutive days of training before the first test. So the results I'm going to show you on the next couple of slides are taken from these 3 different ERP test sessions. The pre-test session, the 1-day post-test that came on the day after the last training session for both spacing groups, and the 10-day post-test. And again, during each one of these sessions, we record EEG while subjects do a species-level matching task. And we're going to look at, first of all, the accuracy results on the matching task using D' as our measure of accuracy. So we had 12 subjects. I don't know. I guess that's cut off. It says 12 subjects per group. Blue is the short group. Red is the long group. And here you can see their D' scores at the 3 different points in time. And we found a significant interaction between group and session, such that the difference between pretest and post-test performance was larger for the long spacing group than the short spacing group. So in other words, longer spacing seemed to facilitate learning. Yeah, that's an issue, and that kind of, you know, it's a bummer, but
does a t-test on the
no, actually, these t-tests aren't significant, but these are. So yeah, it's a bummer. what more can I say? So this is the exact same slide figure that I showed in the previous slide. And what I'm going to do on subsequent slides is try to simplify things a little bit by taking the D prime difference between post-test performance and pre-test performance. So here we see delta D prime values at both retention intervals. And you can see that the learning effects didn't really drop off after 10 days. And both of the groups seem to show similar advantages for long spacing. Now, this is actually what we initially thought going into this experiment, and this is what you might think if you don't read the papers of people like Moser and Paschler very carefully, is that the spacing effect would always be larger with a longer retention interval. So we actually had predicted that the spacing effects would be larger at the 10-day spacing than at the 10-day retention interval than the 1-day retention interval. But actually, the analysis that Mike just presented makes the opposite prediction. So here's a slide that this is what Mike called his coup de grace slide that I was able to borrow from him, showing the relationship between retention interval and the optimal spacing delay. And so the red line, again, shows the optimal spacing delay across a wide range of retention intervals. And here I've superimposed our four conditions. So L1, and again, this is plotted on a log-log scale. L1 and L10 are the 1 and 10-day retention intervals for the long group. S1 and S10 are the 1 and 10-day retention intervals for the short group. And one of the things you can see is that all four of these points fall above the line. So it seems like the delays we used were above the optimal delays given the retention intervals that we chose in this particular experiment. And furthermore, what's even more interesting in some respects, this analysis would have actually predicted better learning by the short spacing group than by the long spacing group. But that's not what we observed. So there's vast differences between the design of our experiment and the experiments that went into the original analysis that all involve recall of verbal materials, for example. So we're really comparing apples and oranges here, and it's hard to sort of hone in on the discrepancies here. But I think the lesson here is that, you know, we were sort of inspired by the spacing effect work done by Moser and Paschler and colleagues, but we never actually talked to them about it before we ran the experiment. So it's probably a good idea to consult with Hal and Mike the next time we try an experiment of this sort and get at some of these issues. So because we didn't really find any differences between the 1-day and the 10-day post-test, I'm just going to concentrate on the 1-day retention interval from here on out. And the next thing I'm going to show you is, again, the delta D prime learning values now separating into the three different training conditions. And you can see that in the short spacing group replicated our previous findings that learning only that performance only benefited from subordinate level training. These delta D prime values are not significantly different from zero for either the exposure or the basic level training group. Whereas if you look at the long condition, first of all, it significantly enhanced performance overall over the short training group. But furthermore, it brought these delta D prime values significantly above zero in the exposure and the basic level training groups. And so this is actually the first time that we've seen significant learning in these conditions. And we think somehow the long spacing sort of brought about these learning effects. Now, for reasons I'm actually giving a poster on this tonight as well, and I'm actually hiding important parts of the design because I didn't have time to talk about it. But I think one of the things that might be going on here is that subjects are generalizing from what they learn about this subordinate level family to help them To perform with these others that receive basic and exposure level training. And just listening to Mike's talk before, it occurred to me that it would seem to be the case that you might predict broader generalization gradients with long spacing if it's the case that long spacing is associated with some kind of contextual variability. So that's something I'd like to talk to you guys about maybe later, but maybe an interesting thing there. Here are the ERP results from, first of all, looking at the exposure training condition. We computed these ERPs by averaging across these two sort of posterior electrode clusters back around here. And the blue lines are the short training group, the red lines are the long training group. And what you can see is for both the N170 and the N250 component is larger, in other words, more negative following training for the long spacing group, whereas for the short spacing group, you can only sort of see a slight increase in the N170. Now, if we look at all the three different training conditions, the basic level ERP results look almost identical to the exposure level results, whereas the subordinate level results look quite a bit different, and in particular, we see a large enhancement of the effects of training on this N250 component for both the long spacing group as well as the short spacing group. So I realize it's sort of difficult to comprehend all these squiggly lines and compare across a group, so I try to summarize things in a little bit more compact format on the next few slides. So here's a summary of the N170 results that's showing the post-test minus pre-test difference in N170 amplitude. So these are sort of like delta N170 scores to get at the learning effects on the N170, like the delta D prime scores we were looking at before. And again, we saw a significant effect of spacing overall, with these differences being larger overall in the long spacing group. We also found that an effect of training conditions such that the effects tended to be to get larger as you go from exposure to basic to subordinate level training. This is something new for us. In the other experiments, these bars would always be flat as if the N170 really wasn't influenced by the type of training. So that's something to keep an eye on. Here's a summary of the N250 results, again expressed as amplitude differences between pretest and post-test. And once again, we saw a significant overall main effect of spacing with larger effects in the long spacing group. But these delta N250 scores were only significantly different from zero in the subordinate level training condition. So in other words, as we've seen before, the N250, like some of our past behavioral effects, only shows a benefit from subordinate level training and not from either exposure or basic level training, even with long spacing. So some sort of broad conclusions here are that perceptual expertise training protocols previously used with birds and cars also are effective for learning novel creatures like this. And I think this is going to hold some advantages for future studies in a couple different respects. And one, it allows us, we're able to parametrically sort of manipulate the similarity space of these objects. And I think that's one thing. So in some ways, you know, a lot of, we're all familiar with Isabel's research with Griebels, for examples. And you might think we're sort of going back to the Griebels by using these novel visual creatures. But one nice thing about these that they're computer generated, and we can more sort of parametrically manipulate the similarity space in ways that would have been harder to do with Griebels. So we're excited about doing that. The other thing we're excited about doing is synchronizing our work with some of the monkey work going on in David Sheinberg's lab. We're really interested in being able to compare across species and run similar paradigms across species. So it's really important to use stimuli that are not previously familiar to either humans or monkeys. So the birds and the cars wouldn't have worked too well in that regard. So second of all, we found that spacing enhances learning as well as the ERP correlates of perceptual expertise. So these spacing effects have been well documented with verbal materials like we've just heard about, but this sort of extends this principle to a more perceptual type of learning. And I think the ERP effects suggest that some of the early visual processes that may underlie perceptual expertise also benefit from spacing. And so I think some of the possible discrepancies between our results and what might be predicted from previous research bear some further investigation, and so we hope to synchronize better with Mike and Hal on these issues in future research. So, oh, and I'd like to thank my lab who did this experiment, particularly Chris DeLauro, who was driven crazy by trying to maintain this spacing schedule. He said he's never going to do another spacing study again. So the next one will have to wait for recruitment of a naive graduate student, I guess, or else moving to web-based stuff like Hal does. That would be nice. So that's it. Thanks. Paul? I really have no idea. I never think about audition, but so the question is, how might this apply to the auditory modality? I have a feeling that you have some ideas. Would you like to share?
Along a certain parameter, and you can actually selectively manipulate along the spectral domain or the temporal domain or both.
Right.
And then look at the effects of training on the individual sound. So
it would be really interesting to look at similar things in the auditory modality and kind of synchronize there as well.
Right, that'd be interesting. And that might serve as good inspiration for some of the similarity manipulations that we can now do in the visual domain that, because we were using these birds and cars and we got slightly different results for things like generalization outside of the training set. And we found ourselves just sort of guessing about what the properties of these objects are that are importantly different for these sorts of issues. But now I think, in some sense, this first experiment was sort of like a proof of concept that, yeah, people can actually learn these things. Because we thought it might be impossible. If you look at them, they're mm-hmm. pretty difficult. They're not impossible. And now we can begin to sort of play around with that.
Could also use phoneme categories from a language that the person's never been exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So that you could start everyone as naive, or even using tones. Mm-hmm. Who could use the tone categories from, let's say, one of the Oriental languages with someone who's never been exposed to them before.
Go ahead. Well, typically we've ignored them. The question is, what happens to the later ERP components? But I'd actually like to start not ignoring them. One of the interesting things that we've seen is, I said I'm not going to present the 10-day retention interval results because they're the same as the 1-day, and that was true in the behavioral domain. But it wasn't true in the ERP domain. And I think we see qualitatively different effects at 10-day retention interval of the ERPs. And a lot of it, I think, concerns some of these later components.
Yeah.
And I think these are later components that are more akin to episodic memory effects
mm-hmm.
and less sort of a perceptual nature like this. It really sort of is something that we need to look at more carefully. And, the data's there.
Oh, that's very cool. One other thing. In terms of other ways to go with the rest of the center, have you thought of maybe passing over data for spectral analysis to see if coherence is changing across expertise to people like Scott's lab, maybe?
The question is, have we thought about doing spectral analysis, time frequency analyses?
Yeah.
And that's, in general, that's a direction my lab is moving in. I've got several students working on that, and so we hope to do that with sort of all of our data that so far, because we realize we're really averaging over a lot of important information with this whole ERP approach. And so I think it may be worthwhile to do time frequency stuff.
That's cool.
Go ahead.
One last quick question. Do you really have a graduate student named Wolfgang Pauli?
Yeah.
Okay.
He actually works with Randy O'Reilly, and he mostly does modeling of the basal ganglia, but he did one project in my lab.
Yeah, he's done some other really good work.
Hopefully he comes back to the lab and does some more with us, but he's mostly modeling basal ganglia still. Thanks.